You are listening to a Geekcast Radio podcast.
Welcome to Off the Cuff. I am your host as usual. Again, I am joined by a returning favorite, Joe Reed.
I like that I'm called a returning favorite.
Well, I don't know when these episodes are going to air.
Did people have favorites? If I'm a favorite, I know, that's great.
I know from the big get-togethers we do, I know people are a fan of Sean Z and Art. And their
antics,
love bickering. Yes. Which we will have more of those because I do plan on getting the four of us together to do E3 shows.
Oh my! This is going to be the E3 that I'm most excited for in a long time. I think there's some good things going to happen. Finally,
I'm hoping to do two shows for E3. I'm hoping to do a prediction episode because I always like predicting things. And then. A what happened episode.
Mm-hmm.
our predictions and what did we get? This week, I thought by the time this airs, it'll probably be like 3 or 4 weeks since we've actually gotten these things, but we're going to talk about them like they're brand new. With Joe's reminder, I just received, was the Figma Samus?
Figma Samus, made by the Figma people. It's based on the Metroid Other M version, but I can't tell because, you know, it's Samus.
Metroid looks like Metroid, yeah. I really like it. And I was just wondering, I thought we could talk about collectibles.
Mm-hmm.
Mainly, I like to collect things. You like to collect things. All geeks like to collect things, but I think geeks in general can be kind of peculiar with the things that they like to collect. Like, for instance, this figure of Samus. Like, I love the character of Samus just like you do.
Yep.
You know, we've talked about this. I have the amiibo for Samus.
I would buy that if I could find it for less than $7.
Well, see that, I guess that's the difference. I wanted it, so I bought it. I actually pre-ordered it, so I can make sure that I got it. And in my mind, I thought Metroid would be one of the rarer ones,
mm-hmm.
but that wasn't the case.
Crazy. I don't think. Yeah, the only ones that are rare are the ones that I think people. I don't know. The games aren't as popular.
Well, Marth was the rarest one, and now Nintendo is reissuing those characters,
mm-hmm.
but with subtle little tweaks done to them.
Mm.
So they're now variants of the same characters.
Yeah.
This is so stupid. Anyways. I have that, and you, like, Danner posted the picture of the Samus figure from Target,
which I had to drive. I twitched all weekend. Like, I got to get up there. I got to get up to, because it's on the north end of town. I'm on the south end of town and things were going down here. I couldn't get up there, but I'm twitching the whole weekend looking for, hey, is there any place we want to take your parents, Jenny, up on the north end of town that we could go up there? Because that'd be great, because I need to stop at this Target here to buy a video game action figure, you know, and we just couldn't make it happen. But first Monday after work, I just drove up there. I gotta get this thing.
So, like, for me, that I wouldn't do, even though I love the character.
Mm-hmm.
Now I only saw the picture that Danner posted. How does it compare? This is kind of going more in depth into what I'm talking about, but how does it compare to, like, the Figma one?
Okay.
You know, the little, like, $3 one versus the $50 one.
Well, there are three Samus action figures that I'm aware of, and there's one that came out many, almost maybe 10 years ago now. And that one had locked elbows down at the sides, maybe this awkward hip joint where the legs could kind of go up and down, and a head joint, and shoulders, of course. It was terrible, but I didn't care because Samus was my favorite thing. I wanted it, never got it, saw it at a collector's store, not for sale. It's one of my favorites. Okay, fine. So when Art posted the picture of this little one, and by that point I had ordered the Figma figure and was waiting for it to get shipped, but Art still posted this picture. It's better than that old crappy one. She has elbows that both pivot and swivel, and so there's some posability to it. Not the greatest
articulation.
Yeah, the hips are okay, but it just is paled by how awesome the Figma figure is. Those Japanese know how to build an action figure.
A collectible action figure.
Yeah.
Like, I don't know if this is one that you would necessarily like play with.
I would not give it to a child, but I handle her.
Nice joke.
Not like that.
I put her in her place.
And then I move her around, then I put her in a place again.
So basically what I'm kind of getting at is, like, I have a threshold for like a, I'll say, collectible quality,
mm-hmm.
that will like put me over the edge to purchase it. Mm-hmm. Like the Target one, I probably would not have purchased even though it was like $4, but the Figma one I jumped at.
Uh-huh.
Because I like having nice things to, I like my collectibles to look nice, mm-hmm. when I display them. So people can be like, oh, those are really cool. And you know, it looks really nice. Do you have anything peculiar that you kind of like collect like that? Like, I recently got my hands on the Chrono Trigger thanks to you and Danner.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that was a fun thing to find. That on that little trip, that was where I found this Figma figure. They had it there, and I drooled on it and didn't buy it there. Found it online for cheaper. Feel bad because they're a local business, but that's what you get for being Amazon. I mainly collect characters and generally don't care about the quality of them because it's not the statue that I love; it's the character.
Okay,
and so. I think that's why I bought this little Samus. Would I have? Yeah, you know, yes, I would have paid the original $8 for it. I bought the little Mario figure in the same line, and he actually showed up on the video podcasts we were doing a couple times. He's a decent figure. He's better than this Samus figure, but yeah, I'd have bought it. And just the fact that I got it for $2.97 was just a bonus. But
So is there, besides figures, is there like anything else like really crazy that you collect? Like, I, when I was younger, for whatever reason, not like super young, when I was in between probably like 18 and I'll say 16 and 20, I would buy like Hot Wheels and Matchbox cars.
Uh-huh.
But I wouldn't get just like any Hot Wheels or Matchbox cars. Like, I would get the ones that were the actual, just the car, like, none of the fancy flames or skulls, yeah. or anything like that. But
the,
like,
dragon shaped car.
Yeah. I would get like the, here's the, like, I have one right here in my hand. I have the 1997 Corvette Matchbox car. And it's just, you know, it's just a Corvette. It's just blue and, you know, no fancy paint job on it or anything like that. I used to collect those and display them. Now they're just in, like, in a little box here sitting on my desk.
I went through a Hot Wheels phase too. Generally, the cars that I saw on Top Gear, watching the three of them, rest in peace, they'll be back on Netflix. But I bought the Hot Wheels cars that I'd see on that show, or the car that I loved, and now my son has inherited them, and I don't mind that they're getting played with. I'd ripped them out of the box anyway, but if you've been listening to the podcast for any length of time, you'll know that I was the video game collector, and this kind of goes into why we collect, and I'm interested in getting your input on this. I had been collecting, finger quotes in the air, video games for years, and it started when I was a kid, and I would go after the game that came out on Nintendo that was this next big evolution. I bought the first thing that had a rumble pack. I bought the first thing that had an expansion pack.
What was the first thing that had a rumble pack, Joe?
That would be Star Fox, I think, now that, yep. I'm Yep.
Okay.
Yep.
Just wanted to test you.
Yeah, it's now, good. I don't remember this stuff anymore. I'm starting to fade.
The expansion pack, though, that one's
Donkey Kong 64. That came with Donkey Kong 64, but it worked with the Legend of Zelda.
Turok 2?
Turok, one of the Turoks. If it wasn't 2, it was 3. But it came with Donkey Kong.
Right.
And you could buy it separately if you had those other games.
But I remember those.
Perfect Dark.
Right, but I remember the expansion pack was released after these games like supported it.
Mm-hmm.
So that's why I was like, it's like a gray area, right? Because it's like, what was the first game that it shipped with? That's Donkey Kong. But what was the first game that actually
used it?
I think that was like Turok.
And I don't know, like Perfect Dark, you could play a gutted multiplayer mode without the expansion pack, but you couldn't do anything else with it. And I wonder what Turok did.
Turok was the fog, like
pushed it back.
They pushed the fog back. As far as I know, the expansion pack also affected Perfect Dark single player campaign.
Yeah, you couldn't play it without it.
So
you had to have the expansion pack for that, which is good that I kept my expansion pack. But so I would collect all these things, and then as the collection grew, it kind of shifted to collecting everything that I had ever played. And it came down to, okay, the only thing that I don't have yet that I played but don't own yet is a Coleco. Got the Coleco, and then now I'm an adult and I have a job, and I had a job when I got that. But I started buying everything that I just didn't have. If I didn't have it yet, I picked it up. Didn't have it, I picked it up. And I picked up backup controllers because someday I wanted to play through these things with my son. So I bought tons of duplicates. And it immediately became less fun. I couldn't remember what I had. I didn't have that emotional attachment to it. And so I think last summer I went to Florida, had like this weird awakening moment and said, you know what, I can't take any of this with me. I'm not taking care of it. It's rotted, not literally rotting, but it's falling apart in this damp basement. I need to get it to somebody.
I think you're one of the few people that goes to Florida and comes back older than when they went.
Or didn't die down there, one of the two. But yeah, I came back and it was just about 3 or 4 weeks ago. I met a guy online, who friend of a friend, through the Geek Sale, and he came over, poked through everything, and just said, What do you take for everything? Like, well, this much. And man, I helped him load it into the car, and I came in and kind of like got weepy for like 30 seconds, but then I looked at the pile of money and looked at all that stuff that I didn't have to pack. I still have a sizable portion of the collection to bring my son through, and it's respectable, and I kept some of the good stuff, but boy, does that feel good. So right now, in the basement, you know, besides the boxes, because we're thinking about moving, and I put it all away anyway, I have Ninja Turtle action figures, which I still actively collect and don't intend on getting rid of. The Ninja Turtles comic books, which is almost a complete set, everything back to 1984. And my Optimus Prime collection, which is...
See, right there, the turtles that you collect.
Yep,
I like turtles. Mm-hmm. I do. And when I came over to your place and I saw that you had the four turtles from the new Nickelodeon series...
Uh-huh.
Like, I immediately had to have those because I liked the way they look. Mm-hmm. I have them like there. And I went out when I came back from Grand Rapids from hanging out with you, I went to Target and bought all four of them.
Mm-hmm.
Because I liked the way they look. To me, that is like a good representation of that. So I guess it comes down for like me, I buy it more like I said, I just buy the stuff to display.
Mm-hmm.
Like this is something geeky that I like, but I'm also like very picky with what I choose to display.
Mm-hmm.
And I want it to like look nice. So I'm not going to have like little like chibi versions of like Ninja Turtles and mm-hmm. stuff like that. Like the other ones that I would probably display are the ones that you have the...
Oh, the NECA.
The
red headbands.
Is it the comic ones? Yeah, yeah. the ones that look like they came out of the comic book, like that one, and the movie ones that are made out of the latex.
Yep.
Those ones I'd probably display if I still like had them. Man, like, I don't know what the thing... I mean, if I had to really think about it, the thing that I've been collecting in my life the longest has been Legos.
I love Legos. I mean, yeah, I don't count that as a collection.
Count?
I don't. Well, the way that you display what you build, yes.
See, that's completely different because I've only been collecting and displaying Legos for 17 years.
Mm-hmm.
which I guess is kind of a long time, right?
Yeah, that is a very long time.
But like, we're old. I've been collecting. Yeah, I mean, I've been collecting and displaying Legos for like 17 years, but when I was a kid, I'd, you know, I get Lego sets and I wouldn't sell them or trade them. Mm-hmm. Like, you don't sell or trade Legos. They get broken down and put in a tub. So in a way, I mean, if you kept the instruction manuals,
I have all those.
You could say you collected them, you know, but I don't have the instruction manuals mm-hmm. anymore. So I guess I really can't say that's, but yeah, I mean, I have very few Super Nintendo games left, like from that time. I have no NES games, like none. I don't even have an NES. I don't have a Super Nintendo either, but I still have my original copy of Chrono Trigger and Secret of Mana with my original save files.
That's cool. Until the battery dies.
Don't say that. It's okay, though, because I also, that's one of the reasons why I keep buying Chrono Trigger whenever I find it.
Mm-hmm.
Because like I have it on the DS, and that's like the definitive version of Chrono Trigger.
Mm-hmm.
And so I played through that once and beat it. So now I could just, if I get the urge to play it, I can just new game plus it.
Uh-huh.
As one is wont to do with a Chrono Trigger game.
I've got to watch you play that over your shoulder and beat it because I got, I think I got to the last guy and got stuck. I can't do those big battle after big battle after big battle. I'd like run out and die.
Oh, it's so easy. You just have to have the right. I personally, I can only beat the game with three characters. Like I cannot mix and match. It has to be these three characters.
Mm-hmm.
And there's only two spells that I use the entire battle. It's very boring, but it goes very fast. But I just keep repeating the same two spells over and over and over again. And I'm pretty sure I've gotten every ending in the game that you can get, except for the fastest one, which is where you can go and fight the end guy right at the end of the game.
Yeah, you pick up the thing right at the end or right at the teleporter.
Yeah, I haven't been able to do that because I need to have three people in my party. I can't do it with just Chrono. Yeah, Chrono Trigger is one of those things where I'll go to like the store and like collect. Like the other day, it was really funny that you guys found that Super Famicom version of Chrono Trigger because I was out with my brother-in-law and I was looking for a copy of Harvest Moon on the PlayStation.
Mm-hmm.
And there are a couple things whenever I'll go into an old video game store, I look for a copy of Xenogears, copy of Chrono Trigger, copy of Harvest Moon, and a copy of Einhander. Now I have a copy of Einhander. I found one like 2 years ago, which made me happy. Played it once, put it on the shelf. I was there at the store and I'm looking through like the stacks of NES games that they have. And they're in this locked display case against the back. And I'm just looking at the spines for them. And I'm like, I turned around and I looked at my brother and I was like, man, I really wish I could find a copy of Chrono Trigger. And he turned around and he goes, you mean like the one that's right on the shelf in front of you? Well, I don't look at like the stuff that's like on display in those cases. Like I look at the stacks of the games pushed to the back, right?
Mm-hmm.
And right there in front of me was this original Chrono Trigger box, like 20, almost 30 years old. No, 1995. So 20 years old.
Wow.
20 years old ish. But there it was sitting right there on the shelf. It was the original box and it was like beat all to hell. And they were asking $275 for it.
Oh, nope.
And I looked at it. And there was a part of me that was like, I really, really want that. And my brother-in-law was like, why don't you get it? I said, because there's no way I could float buying a box for $275 by my wife.
Mm-hmm.
Like, she will let me buy just about anything. But because it said $275, I didn't even bother to see if it came with the game. Like, I'm assuming it came with the game.
Mm-hmm.
I told my wife about it and she was like, does it even come with the game? I was like, I don't even know. She goes, well, that's dumb if it doesn't come with the game. But it was just really funny that you guys found the Famicom version like in perfect condition.
$35, $40? Yeah. Famicom games, they get dirt cheap over here. The systems, on the other hand, are, I don't think I saw a Japanese Famicom once come into GameStop and I would have loved to buy it from the 14-year-old girl who brought it in, but I did not have cash on me at the time, so that left and I wept. But here's a big collectible question. Actually, why don't you ask your question first, and then I have a big collectible question.
Well, it was kind of a question about, because you would probably know more about this than I would. Mm-hmm. Is the American version, I mean, beyond the probable price gouging that was occurring at this store, right, for $275?
Uh-huh.
Is the reason that the Famicom version might have been less, even though it was in better condition, because it's not playable here?
Yeah, it's the demand, and the demand is for wanting to be able to play it on the Super Nintendo. And the, you know, somebody needs to get over to Japan and figure out a way to get the things that they have over there over here for a reasonable price. I had an across the street neighbor who bought a Famicom. He went over there to visit family. And he came back with a Famicom, and he says, the Famicom is free. You can walk out the store with those, but the AC adapter is $10. And so you buy that, you get this Famicom with it. And so for $10, he got something that over here on eBay is $250. And yeah,
I've heard about that stuff.
He had to fly on a plane, which probably cost more than $1,000 to fly there and back. But it just seems like, man, there'd be a way to get that over here and to sell those things for $40. But the games, they come over here. I mean, I have tons of Famicom games and Super Famicom games that, you know, I didn't pay more than $5 for, and who knows? I don't know. But
one of my personal favorite things that I have as a collectible, and I've probably mentioned this before on the show, but since this is a newer take, I'll mention it again. I still have my two favorite games are Chrono Trigger and Xenogears are at the top of my favorite games list. And I have a sealed in the box copy of Xenogears.
Shrink wrap?
And it's, yep.
Cool.
And it's not the greatest hits edition. It's an actual, you know, an original pressing of the game.
Mm-hmm.
And at one point it was going for like $300-$400 on eBay. And I mean, I would never sell it. Mm-hmm. I don't do that. I don't buy stuff to flip it. But I, you know, I always kind of took it as a pride that I had this. And then, of course, along comes Virtual Console and the ability for, like, you know, the PlayStations to play PlayStation 1 classics and stuff like that. And they released it on there for $10, which immediately the market for it just, like, fell right through the floor.
Yep.
So, I mean, it doesn't really bother me. That's, you know, because I don't buy the stuff to flip it. I still have it, and it still means something to me that mm-hmm. it's still, like, in the box. But at the same time, it now means that I can get a digital copy of it for, like, $8 and still be able to play it.
And not have to open it.
Exactly. So it's, like, it's a win-win kind of thing. Like, I lost something that was, like, at one point valuable, but now it's just valuable to me, which is the way it's always been.
Mm-hmm.
So, anyways, what was your question?
Big collectible question that I've often wondered, and I'd like to hear, and I'm open this up to our listeners as well and to you here live, but why does collecting seem to be so important to this geek generation? Like, my dad, and I don't know, maybe your dad's the same, doesn't collect anything. My mom doesn't collect anything. And I kind of look at that and go, man, that must be boring. So much of who I am is that guy who goes out and hunts for things. And, you know, even getting rid of the video game collection, there's plenty of things that I'm still hunting for and really, really want to collect and then to display it. There was something special and unique about our childhood that made so many of us go back and buy the little plastic figurines from our childhood. And not only that, but to grow up, get degrees in film directing and screenwriting, and then make movies about the things that we love and comic books about the things that we love. There's so much nostalgia going on with our generation, but that happened before podcasts.
No. I'm not saying that's what caused it. I'm saying podcasts about that stuff.
Oh, I see. Thank you. Yes.
Yeah.
So what is unique about our generation that made that happen?
First of all, I think you need to look at there was a weird thing that happened with our generation is in terms of like marketing barriers came down.
Mm-hmm.
And I feel like toys came a long way in the 80s
mm-hmm.
Versus like other generations. And that might be part of it. Also, I think marketing for certain things got stickier. So the drive to collect was there kind of like,
Gotta catch them all, Pokemon.
Well, I mean that came like later, but yeah, that's like the ultimate. That's the ultimate personification of that, right? Mm-hmm. Like, but like Muscle Men, you know, you want to get all those little plastic guys or Garbage Pail Kids. Gosh, like, you
even,
gotta get
even Voltron. You needed to buy all five of those robots to make the character you wanted.
Exactly. So, like, I just feel like that the toys when we were growing up were marketed towards getting you to buy like all of them. Like, it was never really. I mean, you could buy, like, sometimes you could get, like, a complete set, like, in a package.
Yeah.
But it, more often than not, it was, like, $5. I mean, I'm making numbers up here, right? But, like, $5 for a figure, but you had to buy, like, five of them. You know, and Micro Machines was like that. Got to collect them all.
Mm-hmm.
I just think toys in our generation were designed to be stickier, more collectible, more like, take me to the store, I want to buy this right now.
Which kind of breaks my heart a little bit as a collector of somebody who collects things because of the characters. It makes me feel like I got duped by clever marketing to make me fall in love with the characters that then makes me go out and buy these $15, $20 pieces of plastic.
Yeah, but here's the thing. You grow up and we grow up, you go to school, you learn about these things, you recognize these things as, you know, what they are. Like, we know that Pokemon is designed to be sticky.
And we know that the Transformers cartoon in the 80s was meant to sell us toys.
Yep. And G.I. Joe. Even the ones, I mean, even the ones now are still designed to sell you toys. Uh-huh. But, I mean, we know this, but I think at a certain point, I think it just becomes like, you want this, not because they've like brainwashed you,
and
but because it just means something to you.
Especially now, the people that grew up with these toys are still making, they're now the ones producing the content, and that content is created with so much love and appreciation. Like, okay, Optimus Prime, the character who I adore as a character, reminds me of my grandpa, that big, deep Peter Cullen voice. On that old cartoon, watching that again, what I fell in love with, that's not a deep character. I invented a lot of stuff that I put on that character as a child that I carried with me into adulthood. But now there are other people who carried that same kind of thing with them, and now they're putting so much more into the Optimus Prime, the character, in these different iterations and universes, and it's still Peter Cullen, which just makes me feel like a child listening to my grandpa again.
See, I think that is like a side conversation to be had, because like, I feel like we're going to get slammed for making this about Transformers here, but like, I agree with you. Like, I can't watch the older Transformers stuff.
Oh no, me neither. Not anymore.
But the newer stuff, yes, I can watch that stuff. Mm-hmm. But again, it's because it's evolved with its audience.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It's a little more intelligent. Not, it's one of the reasons why, like, when I go to like see movies that are based off of properties from our childhood, I go in with like zero baggage, because it's not going to be what it was in my head. It never will be. And that's part of, again, another side conversation. That's part of the whole issue with a lot of these things, is that when you try to adapt a franchise like Transformers or Turtles or Gem, let's just throw that out.
Yeah, no,
that was the thing. Like, that's an uphill battle, because you're fighting against nerd and geek expectation. And you'll never meet it.
And you're climbing up a hill of geek expectation across the bodies of executives who want something else.
Yeah, and you'll never get there. I mean, it's a Sisyphusian, is it?
Yeah.
They can try. I don't care. I don't really think it matters what director it is. It's, you know, they're going to nothing that they're adapting from your childhood will live up to what you've made it up to be in your head.
Okay, list three of the most successful things like that. And I have two in my head immediately, but I'll let you go.
The most successful
bringing our childhood and letting us have it the way that we think we wanted it. And a lot of that is based on opinion, because, you know, I look at, for instance, I look at Samus, and I have a picture of what I think Samus is and who she is and what she acts like. But because she's been a silent protagonist, we have a different expectation. You and I might have different expectations. But so what are your favorite translations into an adult experience of a childhood property?
So of anything, not
of
just...
anything, of anything. I'm thinking mostly things that either got turned into movies or television shows or comic books or something, some new media.
Well, I think I can draw from the. I feel like Samus did a good job of not to use this again, but I feel like for me that they did a good job with that game of keeping up with the times, because what did Metroid start out as? It was like a 2D side scroller because that's what the NES did. That's what the Super Nintendo did, like the best. And then when Nintendo went 3D, Metroid was able to make that jump successfully to 3D by going with a first person shooter mechanic. And even then it still preserved the spirit of a Metroid game because it was still like 50-50 exploration shooting.
And that music. I don't call it a first-person shooter. That was a first-person adventure.
I agree with you, though. It's Metroid in first person.
Yep.
I feel like that one does move with you. Now, I have not played other M. I've heard things about it. I have not personally played it.
It's mostly because...
Okay, see, everything I've heard about it keeps me from wanting to play it.
We can, you can spend 15 minutes with me on that and realize you don't want to play it, if you want to someday.
Maybe.
That's not my Samus Aran.
Something else that made the jump. I can think of one that, because I try to take zero nostalgic baggage in with me. I feel like, to me, the first G.I. Joe movie got what I used to do with my G.I. Joes. Like, not necessarily like the show. I'm not talking about like, I'm not talking about like G.I. Joe's the show. I'm talking about like me
playing with your toys in the sandbox in the backyard.
Yes. Like, I feel like that's what I remember G.I. Joe being, and the scene that most like exemplifies that is the elevator scene towards the beginning when they're in the base and they're going down and they're like going through like it's the glass elevator and there's like the training thing and they feel like the jets flying and then it goes down like now there's like surface level water warfare simulations and then it goes down underwater and you see like the underwater vehicles and stuff like that. Like that to me brought back like me like playing in my family room, and I used to take my parents' coasters and stick them under the couch cushions to prop them up a little bit so it'd be like a cave in the couch.
Oh yeah, yeah.
And so like you'd have like the top level and then you'd have like your base in the couch cushions and then you'd have like the thing like that. To me, just that one scene like kind of like totally made that movie for me, and like to me that's the one that kind of met my expectations. But again, I didn't go into it as like a G.I. Joe fan.
Yeah.
Like, so what are your two?
If
I stole Samus from you, I'm sorry.
No, that's fine. I wasn't even thinking video games. I think one of the most, I'm stuttering. The new Ninja Turtles comic by IDW, made, drawn, written by a bunch of fans who are my age, who grew up with the original comics, mostly the cartoon and the things that came after that, made with such love, and it's totally new. They're tying all these different properties together, all these different versions of the Turtles together into this beautiful package where everything works. Everything is adult, not to say mature and bloody and gory, but it's written for people who are my age.
It doesn't treat you like you're dumb.
Indeed. The Ninja Turtles comic right now, I think, is top as to something that gets back to nostalgia and really makes me feel like I'm not a child enjoying this property. I think the other thing, the other people who are really doing a good job are Marvel with all of their movies. I don't know. Even when they change something like Vision's origin in Age of Ultron, I don't hear the geeks griping. Like, he's not the body of the Human Torch. He's not the original Human Torch remade. No, nobody complains like that because they're doing it with such love for...
Oh, no, they complain. You're just not looking at the right spots. Like, and that's what I was... I guess Another side topic for a future show, maybe, because I love talking about the Marvel Cinematic Universe. Love talking about it. But, like, at what, we're 11 movies in, and they've already slated 11 more movies. At what point do we stop? Or I've already done it. I gave up a long time ago. Mm-hmm. But at what point should geeks give up comparing this stuff to the comics? Like, at what point does do the Avengers movies or the Marvel movies become their own universe, like the Ultimates?
Yeah,
like,
and when do we read the comic and say that didn't happen in the Avengers movie?
Or not, I'm not even saying it has to go the other way. Yeah. I'm just saying, like, there, because, like, for a little while, Marvel had, like, the standard continuity, which is the 616 universe, mm-hmm. and then they had the Ultimates line. And, I mean, I never went in fan forums or anything like that and read about people complaining that the way they did something in the Ultimates was different than the way that they did it in the 616 mm-hmm. universe, because there were a lot of different changes. Yeah. And a lot of the Marvel Cinematic Universe actually kind of, in my opinion,
is more Ultimate than anything.
Yes, because, and I see that because I'm a big fan of the Ultimates universe because it's way less confusing.
Yep.
But I, for me, like, at what point does the Marvel movies just become their own thing? At what point do you just go, that's not the way they did it in the comics? That's mm-hmm. dumb. At what point does it just, like, become its own thing? Like, that's cool. Like,
I hope it's now because my circle of geeks, you know, going to the comic stores and talking to the owners or the other people browsing the bins, I don't hear anybody complaining about the Marvel movies. And I know that if you go into an internet forum, you're going to find some dirtbag troll who wants to start an argument because he loves that one issue of some Avengers out of the 1980s. But on the general, I don't think anybody hates those movies.
Oh, I know, and I know the internet is, like, vocal. I'm just saying, I don't think people hate them. I'm just saying, like, at what point do people just be like, that's not the way they did it in the comic? I mean, even when my wife and I were watching Age of Ultron, she would lean over and she's like, is that how it happens in the comics? I'm like, it's not the comics.
Uh-huh.
You know, so I'm just curious because, like, people have different experiences and stuff like that. I'm just going to put that out there to listeners. When do you think that'll stop? You know, because by the time this is all over, we're going to have 22 Marvel movies, and I'm pretty sure that's enough for you to stop comparing it to the comic.
You want to hear my theory on the last Avengers film? They're going to reboot the universe and restart everything with new actors.
That's not the way it's heading.
You don't think?
No, they're in a transition period right now. So the only returning people that have films left are Cap and Thor. Everybody else is new characters. The Infinity movies will be a send-off to everyone that was in the Phase 1, Phase 2. And they're going to continue with Phase 3 characters. They're banking on the Phase 3 characters that they're introducing, like Black Panther and Ms. Marvel and some of the other ones, like Doctor Strange, being interesting enough to carry the Marvel movies forward without Captain America or Iron Man or Thor.
I think you can continue the Marvel universe in TV series and other smaller movies with those characters, but I don't think you can replace the characters, not the actors. I don't think you can replace the characters. The big Avenger characters are popular for a reason. Black Panther is that interesting.
Well, but Marvel's banking on that because they're going to get so much crap when they go to recast Cap or Tony Stark. So there've been interviews and stuff. They're banking on making these movies, like, so that they don't have to use those characters. So, and that, to me, that's kind of exciting because it means they think they've got an interesting interpretation of these characters.
Mm-hmm.
So, but we can talk about this all, like, later.
Yeah, because we're not back where, yeah, collectibles, yeah.
So, yep. But, hey, it's off the cuff. We could talk about whatever we want.
Indeed.
So.
I stand by my theory.
It'll be interesting to see if it happens. I mean, I'm not going to be one of those people that goes, oh, they don't need to reboot this stuff. It's not a popular opinion, but I'm okay with reboots and remakes.
Yeah.
Because at the end of the day, the way I see it is, I don't have the remake or the reboot doesn't do away with the original one. And 98% of the time when they do a remake or a reboot, the original one gets like a nice Blu-ray release with a ton of special features and a free ticket to see the new one that you might think is garbage. I don't know. I'm okay with it because I like seeing different takes and stuff like
and,
that.
And so. I'd like to see a different Tony Stark, you know, just a whatever, you know. And if they do that, I think they'd take some time off, maybe focus on TV series and then reboot the cinematic universe. But you're probably right. But that's what I hope happens because I like those characters.
It'll be interesting to see what happens. That's all. But, you know, we've got another 5 years.
Mm-hmm.
11 movies in 5 years.
I'll be 40 years old.
Stop it.
Oh, my God.
Anyways, I'm not sure when this episode's going to air, but is there anything you want to plug?
If it's after June 13th, you missed the Geek Stuff garage sale. It's before June 13th. Wonderful.
Or maybe you showed up.
Yeah, thanks for coming out and giving me a whole bunch of money because I used that money to buy that one comic that I still need for my set. But now June 13th, Geek Sale in Midwest Grand Rapids, north end of... Midwest Michigan, northwest of Grand Rapids at Big Kids Games.
All right. If you want to get in touch with us, you can comment on our parent site at geekcastradio.com or send emails to us at feedback@geekcastradio.com. Subject line off the cuff. It'll get sent on to us, and we'll talk about it in a future episode. You can find myself, Michael Powers, on Twitter, Xbox Live, and the PlayStation Network at BoothNinja81. Joe?
I am afraid of most social media sites, but you can find me at facebook.com/geekstuffgaragesale. I check those messages frequently and would absolutely flip my stuff if you sent me a message there concerning off the cuff. I'd be flattered. And I would promptly reply to it with enthusiasm.
All right. We will fill your ear holes again next week. We'll be right back.